Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin. Welcome to part three of the Double Standard episode. I'm here with our co-host, Kira Soltanovich, and our guests, Dr. Stuart Fishbein, Sarah Shahi, and Steve Howey.
Now, when you were flicking her foot...
You being Dr. Stu, right?
You being Dr. Yes. Stu, yes. I forget, there's no television here. There's no cameras in here.
No cameras.
But why didn't you, like, didn't they used to pick babies up and, like, slap them on the butt?
But that was because they came, you were up in stirrups and you came out vaginally, and that's what they did, and that's how they did it, at least in the movies and stuff like that. I don't remember the details as much as you do, because obviously I've seen a lot of them, and yeah. So it was special for you, special for me too, but my memory is old. I'm going to turn 60 this year. What we try to do is we try to either rub their back, we try to piss them off, actually.
Right.
And and then Beth talking to the baby, saying, come on, little girl, come on, girl.
Yeah.
That we usually want the parents to talk, because the baby knows your voices.
Yeah.
Right.
And you talk to the baby, and the baby will, and then they come. And the difference between doing this birth here or doing it in the hospital is when the baby comes out floppy at the hospital, they often do something really stupid, which is they will doubly clamp the cord, cut the cord, which is its lifeline, and then hand the baby over to the nursery, so they take it over to the warmer, and then they try to resuscitate it over there. So if you're going to resuscitate a baby, you want to do it while it's connected and still on your chest. People, hospitals, most hospitals are beginning to learn that sort of thing, and beginning to understand that the baby is getting oxygen even when it's not
breathing
yet.
Right.
As long as its heart rate is okay.
Right.
And her heart rate was always okay.
Yes, yeah. Hers was always fine. Right. But as far as putting her upside down and slapping her on her butt to piss her off, that's just an ancient method that nobody does anymore.
Yeah, and it's dramatic. It's just... I think it's show business and dramatic.
Oh, okay, okay, very good. Too. So then baby A, Violet, she came around, she started crying, and I started breastfeeding her.
I cut the cord.
It was a while later.
It wasn't, because I wanted to stay connected to her for as long as I could.
Well,
I wanted to, until it got to a point that the contractions with the second one became so intense that I couldn't be connected with her anymore. I had to focus on the second one.
Nature is kind of interesting.
Is there a break there?
Yeah, nature is kind of interesting. And what I've seen in these twins at home births, where you leave them alone, is often there's a pause. After the first baby comes out, nature gives the mother a chance to sort of bond with baby A. And often the contractions in the uterus will relax for a little bit. Maybe the uterus needs a little bit of recharge too. Hmm. And then, so sometimes that's 5 minutes. Sometimes it's 30 minutes. And then they start to come back. And in a recent birth that we had with twins, we actually, it was an hour or more than an hour and a half had gone by. We decided to put the baby on the breast and use natural oxytocin, mom's oxytocin. I don't know if we did that.
We did. Yeah. Yeah. No, I took her right to the breast and I started breastfeeding her. And, you know, and she stayed on and we were on. And it was for about 30, 40 minutes or so before we cut the cord and it became push time with baby B. And what was also, I want to say to anyone who's thinking about this, is that we had our firstborn, we had Wolf in the room with us, and Wolf actually put on his goggles and his swimming shirt.
Yes, he did.
And he jumped in the tub when I got in the tub, and he jumped in with Steve and he watched his sister come out. And he, you know, I think in the middle of it, he even screamed, like, I saw my mom's vagina. and Dr. Fishbein was like, Wolf. You know, and it was just, but it was great. It was great. It was great that he has that. And he wasn't scared. He wasn't grossed out by it. I actually made Wolf my labor coach at one point, because I didn't want him to be afraid of any of the sounds that I was making. And I talked to him about it, and he was excellent. So I'm so glad that we made the decision to have Wolf.
Speaking of Wolf, during his birth, that oxytocin, we were kind of in a lull in the labor. So Yvonne suggested that I go and start kissing Sarah. So Sarah found a position and she was straddling the toilet seat down, but facing the tank.
I'm straddling it backwards to try and open it.
I went behind her. And started kissing her neck, and she elbowed me in the nose really, really, really hard. And I came back holding a bloody nostril. And I went, Yvonne, that didn't work.
But actually, it did work. Because that wasn't... I didn't... I mean, I know I elbowed you, but I didn't elbow you.
Cartilage crunched.
No, but it did. That oxytocin, because all of a sudden I started pushing. I remember I was at 6 centimeters and I kind of got freaked out because I started pushing, but I wasn't pushing. It was my body. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
And anyway, whatever. But yes.
We digress, though.
We digress.
But we're going back to
so
baby
then,
B.
Yeah, so 30 minutes after baby A comes out and we're breastfeeding and she's doing great. The contractions are getting to be to a point where they're becoming, I can't hold Violet anymore. She needs to come off me. I need to focus on baby B. So then we clamped her. I think Steve held her, right? You were the one.
You know she'll resent you for the rest of her life. You know that, right?
For clamping?
You abandoned me.
Oh, and so yeah, and then Knox was our, you know, Knox was our challenge. I had to get out of the water for it. I wasn't comfortable getting out of the water.
Oh, Dr. Stu wanted you to get out of the water.
He wanted me to get out of the water. He wanted me to be on land.
Remind us why land for this one?
I think if, you know, if my memory, first of all, I'm more comfortable doing breaches on land because if I have to intervene, I can do something where if she's in the tub and there's a problem, then Steve and I would have to lift her out of the tub and pull her over to the bed.
One of you would end up with a broken nose.
What's
the problem? Right.
Or both, yeah.
And I think that if I remember, we intermittently were listening to Knox's heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that at some point we started to hear what are called variables. We started to hear the heart rate drop down and come back up again. And at this point, I wanted to get things moving. So we moved her where I could put her in a position on her back where I could, if I have to put pressure on her, if I could, I could assist by helping her push if I
had to. And you did.
And I did.
So you pushed externally, like from the top?
Yes.
At that point, when the heart rate was down, I did.
Oh,
because
yeah.
That's how I was born, but that was like Soviet Union style,
yeah.
Where they the nurses sat on my mom.
Yeah, there's a big thing, and you know,
they really do it.
Again, there's sort of a taboo against something called fundal pressure. Fundal pressure is a very useful tool if you know what you're doing. Again, it's not a lot of people aren't being trained to use it properly, and with a head first baby, sometimes you can get what's called a shoulder dystocia. I don't think you can get that with a breech baby. I don't think that ever happens. But we needed to get that baby out, and she was exhausted, and I was just giving her some assistance. Yeah.
What's funny is I think that I remember this day, you know, like the back of my hand, that I know every detail, but I don't have any memory of you pushing on my belly at all. What I remember of Knox is that video that we have of him coming out and you literally reaching in.
Well, at that point, when I was down, I was just helping him out. I did what's called an assisted breech delivery. Normally, you try to keep your hands off the breech and you just let the baby come out and the mom push it out. But at this point, once the baby's butt came around the corner, I did maneuvers to help get the legs out and the arms out and the head out.
Is that on the video?
Butt first.
Yeah.
That literally will be a training video. Balls.
Yeah.
And then one leg, he got his fingers around his hips and started working them. And then one leg popped out, then the other one. But then his left arm was behind his head.
Yep.
So Fishbein is like maneuvering, working him.
Like corkscrewing him
to not hurt his arm.
Yeah.
And then the one arm popped out, and then the other arm got out, and then the head slided out, and then there he was.
Like a baby horse.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah, exactly. I've seen those on YouTube. Yeah. That's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah.
But it was amazing to watch because she had her knees so far back. And I didn't know the vagina could do that.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a blooming onion from Outback.
a light shines through, like out of it. Like
it was like it went out.
It was that lightning that caused the whole thing to take place in the first place.
Yeah.
Knox's bag didn't break. Remember that? Knox's bag. And I kept asking him, like, I'm like, break the bag. And you wouldn't do it. You said, you need to break this bag. I'm not going to break it.
Is trying to be natural.
What?
No, it's
what? Is it like trying to open like a cereal bag that won't open?
Because there were two midwives there watching me.
I
was under scrutiny. I couldn't do
break
anything.
Break the bag.
No, it's a union thing. You have to break the bag.
Yeah. That's
what.
Yeah.
How do you break the bag?
Well, it just with enough put. I mean, pushing? I thought I was pushing past. Well,
sometimes the second bag doesn't break, and babies are often
is
born
he
in the
still
cloth.
In we the didn't. Bag? They're 14 months.
Yeah.
I think I did break the bubble. Bag eventually. No, you didn't. Oh, you broke it on
because
your own?
I did. Because what happened is you went for it. You went for the hook.
Oh, I went for the hook.
You went for it. And then with that contraction, it broke.
You get the splash? Oh,
and you did. There was a lot. There was a splash.
Splash on your face? I don't have any right. Were you thinking, I need the beekeeper thing right
yeah,
now?
The hazmat.
The hazmat.
I think there was like... FEMA. I can't remember if there was meconium or if there like what there was. But yeah, he came out.
Hear hook, I think of like midnight Captain? At the Apollo, whatever what's it called.
Oh,
where the hook, the hook comes out. Yeah. Like, all right, baby, that's a curtain call for you.
The audience is not into you.
You have a nightmare about hooks, don't you?
It's terrible.
What, Dr. Stu, was there any moment there, because some of it sounds pretty dramatic, any moment there where you're like, we should be at a hospital right now? Nothing. It was all routine.
Now, once the process is going, there was nothing that I was worried about as far as the baby's not coming out. So no.
Why is it? Because I have friends, obstetrician friends, who do deliver breech babies vaginally. Mm-hmm. And one of them is very into the medical model, but a bunch of them are okay doing it, just no meds, naturally. They do VBACs, naturally. They do a lot of different kinds of birth with no intervention, but when it comes to twins, they almost universally want to be in the operating room with an epidural. What is it about twins? What are we worried about with the twins, different from a singleton
one
baby?
One is evil. Let's just start with that.
Well, that. if one of the baby's heart rates gets into trouble, like during the pushing phase of twin A, and say baby B isn't doing well, and you needed to intervene, that would be a potential problem.
Is but that something that happens regularly?
Sure, it can happen, but it doesn't generally happen in concordant twins.
Oh, I see.
And it generally doesn't happen when they're not immobilized, anesthetized on Pitocin, that sort of thing. You just generally don't see babies deteriorate like you do with people in the hospital. I mean, I've got 6 years of observation of that after 28 years in the hospital. And, you know, it's starting, you know, once or twice is luck, but you do this many times, it becomes a pattern. And, I was really well trained.
In that case, so you're almost asking for that to happen by, you know, numbing them from the chest down and sticking
them
into
a bed. Listen, the data doesn't lie. I mean, you look at the C-section rate for twins in a hospital.
Well,
it's pretty high.
And it's becoming less common to even have the choice.
Right. And even some doctors are doing C-sections for head first twins.
Right.
Wow.
Because they're afraid that the second twin might turn to breech, and they don't know what to do
with a breech
because they're not taught how to reach up and do what's called that breech extraction.
Basic. Because do people ask you have a boy and a girl twins? Do people ever ask you if they're identical?
All the time.
Yeah.
We had a guy come to the house day. We had a guy come to the house the other day, and I had my 6 year old, and then I had my 2 1 year old twins in a playpen, and he asked me which ones were twins.
Obviously, it's the two boys.
That brings up an interesting point because you asked about again, proper selection of clients, and one of the things that's really important, like in Sarah's case, Sarah and Steve's case, is that they were what we call diamniotic, dichorionic twins. In other words, they're in two separate sacs in separate sacs.
So let's talk about that. There are different kinds of twins.
Correct.
First of all, there's the ones that we know are identical and non-identical, maternal and fraternal.
Right. Identical twins can be in separate sacs, or they can be in the same sac.
How does identical twins happen?
The egg splits after fertilization.
One egg comes down. It becomes fertilized by one sperm.
And then it splits at some point.
And
depending when it splits is what kind of chorionicity, what kind of membranes that you see.
Okay. And what are the options?
Well, one is called mono-mono twins, which is not mono-a-mono.
Not that.
No, it's where they're in the same sac. And they're identical. They're in the same sac. And that has a high mortality rate or a high problem rate because they can get tangled up in each other. Their cords can get twisted amongst each other. And there's a high rate of something called twin-twin transfusion syndrome, where one twin, because they share a placenta, one twin maybe starts pumping to the other twin, and one twin gets really big, one twin gets really small. It can be a real potential problem. There are pioneering doctors who are finding the vessels in the placenta that are doing that, and they're actually going in and lasering them and trying to save these
twins. Balance the, because otherwise the little one goes?
Well, they both theoretically can die when that happens.
There's a comedian, Skylar Stone, who just went through this, and his wife had 3 operations.
During the pregnancy.
To save the twin.
Successful.
What's it called? Transfusion.
Twin-twin transfusion syndrome.
Yeah, they had exactly that. And she had 3 separate surgeries.
Right.
And did it work?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And those sorts of twins are not something that I would ever consider doing in a home setting.
That's a high risk set of twins.
If, even if they made it to term, I wouldn't.
When you say those set, you're saying mono-mono twins?
Mono-mono twins.
Because two twins in the same sac plugged into the same placenta.
Yeah. It's just
too much going on in there.
That, yeah. That's, first of all, it's rare. I don't see mono-mono twins very often, but it's just not something that I would be even comfortable with.
Okay.
Mono-die twins, where they're in one big sac called the chorion, and there's two amnions.
Okay.
They're also identical twins. And if they're concordant and they grow and their growth is fine, then they generally will do fine in labor.
They each have their own placenta?
Often, well, no, it's usually a shared placenta.
Through two separate amnions?
It's fused, amnions? Basically.
Okay.
Right. They each have their own placenta, but they only have one chorion.
But they all have their own bubble. Fused. They each have their own little mini bubble.
They're in their own mini bubble inside the big bubble, right?
And the placenta is inside the big bubble.
No, well, the placenta is outside the bubble.
Outside the big bubble?
Yeah, yeah. It's the chorion is covering.
So they're both, the cords are going through the two layers.
The cords go through the amnion and through the cord and into the placenta through the cord.
Okay, so chorion. They're both.
The cord is covered with amnion and chorion. Right?
So they're identical twins. Yeah. Each in their own little bubble.
I'm going to have to go home and and make sure I'm saying this correctly.
That's fine, but chorion steaks. And then they're plugged into the same placenta.
Yes.
Okay.
And sometimes, and a lot of times identical twins, one of the twins can have a sort of a lousy insertion side of the placenta, what we call the shady side of the placenta, not get as much nutrition as the other one, so they don't grow symmetrically. That, again, if they're not concordant, then they may not very well tolerate labor. If one is growing what we call growth restricted or not growing well, it may not tolerate labor very well. So that one, I wouldn't let those people deliver at home either. They really have to be properly selected.
You wouldn't attend their birth.
What did I say?
You said you wouldn't let them labor at home.
Okay, right. I would not allow them. Right. No.
You would not be their provider for a home.
I know. I hate the word. We all hate the word allow in our profession, so we don't use that word. But, you know, I would think it was not safe, and I would not advise them to do that, and I would not support that.
If there's mono-die.
If they're discordant.
If the cord is
discordant. If they're discordant.
If they're discordant or if the cord is not.
Yeah, well, no, if the cord is out there, but they're still concordant, that's fine.
That's okay. So as long as they're okay. So and then is that the two options for identical twins?
Well, identical twins can also be die-die if the egg actually splits before implantation, but that's
and
also
gets
quite rare.
Double fertilized? Both of them.
Oh. Yeah, the egg gets fertilized. It's traveling down the tube. It splits completely before implantation.
Okay. Are they talking about farming?
So sexy, right. Isn't it?
So this is a little more technical, maybe.
Those are totally separate. Then they're identical.
They would be identical, but you wouldn't know they're identical unless you did DNA testing after they were born.
Until they come out and be like, surprise, these are identical.
Yeah, and it's hard to tell sometimes because twins, you know, essentially a wolf and Knox or Wolf and Violet are non-identical twins, technically speaking. They're two eggs. They just came out five and a half years apart. But
wait, what?
Yeah, that guy was right. Which one are the twins?
Right.
all three.
No, because they're just a single egg from your
Wolf
from
and
your
Violet ovary. Look more alike than Knox and Violet.
Of course.
Yeah, they're not identical twins.
No.
They're siblings with the same birthday.
Right. That's exactly what they are. They're siblings with the same birthday.
But Wolf's a sibling too. He just has a different birthday.
Who can speak a secret language?
Yeah. Wait, and what so is this is because I dropped an extra egg.
Right. And if you dropped the extra egg 3 years later, you would have had three kids all different ages. But you happen to drop two at the same time.
As opposed to your egg splitting.
Right.
Right.
I just had
two different babies on the same day.
And the same day.
So exactly. then that could...
Which is like...
So are those still two, called twins?
Yeah.
Yes.
So ish. Two different fathers could...
That has happened.
Right.
That could
that's rare. Yeah. That just happened recently.
That's a little embarrassing, actually, sometimes.
You know what? That happened in Israel. Oh.
That's a big oopsies.
That just happened in Israel. I saw a headline in an Israeli newspaper of a couple that did IVF, but then also had some together time, Twister, and got pregnant with both.
Did donor IVF? Donors?
No, they used his sperm to do IVF.
Well, how do they know that they were
to... They did a frozen egg transfer, I believe. They did a frozen egg transfer.
Right.
And they also had intercourse, and she dropped an egg that cycle as well.
So she got pregnant while she was pregnant?
At almost the same time.
Well, how do they know that happened? How do they know that the embryo they planted didn't split?
They're not identical.
Oh. And they only put one embryo in.
Right.
Okay. Then, yeah, then that would be happen. But that's different than having two fathers.
You know, but that can happen too. It happens to other animals, but it's rare. Because once you fertilize an egg, your body says no more. Yeah.
Right. I want to trip you guys out for a second. You guys ready? Mm. This is crazy. So I met a brother and sister. Okay. Now, I'm a little bit Russian gypsy, right? So I met them and I was like, there's something about you guys. What's going on here? And they looked at each other and they were like smiling. And I was like, there's something real freaky going on. Well, the older sibling, a boy, his mother, we'll just call her Jane, right? Jane was married to his father. They had him. Then Jane cheated on his father with his twin brother, identical.
What?
And had his sister. They have the exact same DNA.
Wow.
They are twins.
From different fathers?
Different.
From brothers.
It's a boy and a girl. Boy and a girl.
They're cousins. They're twins.
From brothers.
From twin brothers. Identical brothers.
They're brother cousins.
They're
brothers. Cousins.
How do they know that?
Because the mother,
but how do they know it was him and not him? Wasn't with him.
Yeah, she wasn't with the older child's father.
Is that really?
Wait, how many years apart are they?
She wasn't with the older child's father.
I get it.
She went with the twin brother?
Is that even cheating? If identical
is the
twin?
Right answer question.
She could lie and just say, I thought it was
Mrs.
you. Mrs. Right. Brown, yeah. Right. I thought you were Dale.
But
like, what does he say?
Know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Does he say, were you thinking?
No,
Mrs. Dale.
Is this Brown? Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
It's about dishwashing detergent. It's a commercial from the 60s, I think.
Oh, you're so adorable right now.
Oh, my God. This is
what I'm talking about?
No.
This is before Betamax.
They do the what's the lotion that everybody
uses?
Palmolive?
Palmolive. It softens your hands while you do dishes?
Yeah.
Rosy.
Yes. And they would feel...
Palmolive.
They would blindfold the guy and he'd feel the hands and he'd go... And you go, that's got to be Dale. And you take the blindfold off. Mrs. Brown, I thought you were Dale. Because the dishwashing softens the hand so much. It's a commercial. You probably can YouTube it.
Now, did they reconcile?
So
they get back together.
Are those brother and sister, are they also identical twins? Because they have the same DNA. The mother's DNA, and then the father's are identical.
Well, they're not
twins.
Identical.
But
they're
weren't
identical
born
twins.
On the same.
They're brother and sister.
They're just brother and sister.
Speaking, they're half brother and
or
but are they?
And they're cousins.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, they're cousins.
They're cousins.
They're brothers.
But they have the same exact.
And
no,
but the brother
but
and sister
on
were like laughing
the
about this.
If she was together with her husband again, they wouldn't be identical twins.
No, but they have the they're half siblings, but they're a full sibling. I don't know.
Right.
Right.
They're half full sibling cousins.
Half full sibling cousins.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a small group on Facebook. Very small.
What happens if the brother and sister get together and have a baby? What happens then?
They have
is that their sister? Is their baby? They're also their sister.
They
and
their
have
cousin? To hyphenate that name.
I'm sorry.
When they get back, when she gets back together with her husband, she's like, "I'm so sorry." How does that go? Did they get back together again?
I don't know that, but I knew there was something odd about this pair of siblings.
Does he say, if that happens, does he say, well, when you were with him, were you thinking about me? Because, right?
I thought you were Mrs. Brown.
Yeah. We are going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Bomb, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not even diaper rash.
I have a question for you, Dr. Stu.
I'm going to stop using palm oil.
Have you delivered triplets?
Yes.
At home?
No.
You wouldn't?
Only.
I don't think I would ever do triplets at home. But I did do triplets vaginally.
Really?
At Cedars.
Yeah, I mean, wow. The Cedars doesn't really have a policy against it. I don't know that anybody else would do it.
No, but this was the kids are now probably 15 or 16, maybe 16, 17.
So they made it.
Yeah, and she was a tiny woman. Wow. Tiny. And she had
you
over
say
16
she,
pounds
You say she was a tiny woman.
Wow.
I had 16 pounds. No. How many pounds did I have?
How much
no,
did Wolf...
No,
I mean,
you know what?
Knox and,
I had about 14 pounds of baby.
Yeah.
14
yeah.
pounds
For
of baby
you,
and,
a lot.
And a 6 pound placenta.
Six seven.
Jeez.
6 pounds. Did you eat your placenta?
Yeah, I did.
I actually did
Me
quads.
Too.
I actually assisted a C-section for quads when I was a resident.
A C-section for quads.
She made it to 32 weeks. We got her to 32
Would
weeks.
You do vaginal quads?
No.
No? Okay.
Like wow, you did quads.
Yeah.
You know, you have to call a vet for that.
You have to call a vet.
But with vaginal quads, you know, especially if you already had a C-section, you have a vaginal quad, V-back twin, breech. Home birth with an advanced maternal age.
Well, theoretically, you could do, the problem with quads is that they're always going to be premature, and you shouldn't be doing
how premature
births at home.
Oh yeah, so let me. I want to. We just have a few minutes left. Everybody's been very generous with your time.
Midnight.
Talked about Mrs. Brown. You talked about identical twins, but then there's also non-identical twins, which is like Sarah and Steve. She just squeezes out another egg and they both happen to get fertilized.
Right.
Two totally separate sacs, two totally separate placentas?
Yeah, although the placentas can be attached to each other, it's very rare in diamniotic dichorionic twins to see twin-twin transfusion syndrome, which is the thing you worry most about with twins as far as them getting to, you know, to viability and to term.
Okay. Anything special during the pregnancy to just with twins in general, a healthy twin pregnancy? That you handle differently? Any other advice for...
I try not to make a big deal out of it because I think that if you tell someone they're high risk, they become high risk. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I don't care if a woman's over 35. I don't think 35 is like suddenly your biological clock ticks over and you become a disaster because you're now 35. No, but we educate, again, the midwifery model is really cool because we get to spend 45 to 60 minutes for every prenatal visit, which is a lot better than the 4 to 6 minutes that mm-hmm. I used to spend when I was seeing, more volume of patients, although I never really did that, but that's typically what a clinic would do. They don't give a lot of preventative health care. So we do a lot of things. We talk about the things, the risks of preterm labor. We talk about the warning signs. We talk about activity. I don't make somebody stop working unless they're calling me and telling me that things are changing. And sometimes we check the cervical length using ultrasound. I try to not do vaginal exams, very, very rare to do them. But with ultrasound, we sometimes will check the cervical length. And if it's getting shorter when it's still early, like 25, 26 weeks, we might tell them to stop working or maybe prevent, you know, not have intercourse or orgasm, not do any heavy lifting, that sort of thing. But ultimately, I would say that I can just tell you from my statistics, and again, it doesn't reach statistical significance because I don't have enough volume yet, but I would say that of the twins I've done, I would think about 20% don't make it to term. They either rupture their membranes or go into labor at 32, 33, 34 weeks. And those people, then their care is transferred to a hospital-based physician. And about 80% make it to term. And I've even had people, you know, and then there's a thought process in the medical model that twins shouldn't go past 37 weeks. And so they often will induce twins at 37 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And I find that to be a little bit absurd. They'll say because the neonatal mortality rate rises beyond 37 weeks. That's also true for singletons, by the way. But you don't see them offering to induce singletons at 37 mm-hmm. weeks. The problem is that yes, it does rise as they get 38, 39, 40, 41 weeks with twins. But there's a big difference between relative risk and absolute risk. And although the relative risk may be increasing, the absolute risk is still relatively small.
Why is that?
Well, it's just numbers. If the risk of neonatal death with twins at 37, I'm making up a number, is one in a thousand.
Yeah.
And say it's three times higher at 40 weeks. it's still 1 in 333, mm-hmm. which is still far less than 1%.
Right.
Now, ultimately, the doctors and the hospitals make the decision that that's too high a risk to take, and therefore we're going to tell all these women they need to be induced at 37 or 38 weeks, and we're not going to let them go past that. But that's really, in the model which I practice, in the ethical model, it's not the hospitals or my decision to make that. My obligation is to inform the couple of these risks and then let them decide. Mm-hmm. Do they want to be induced? Do they want to have an elective C-section, or would they rather wait? What's the risks of being induced? What's the risk of a cesarean section? A lot of times people aren't told of those risks. They're only told that if you don't do what I tell you to do, then something bad could happen. And that just isn't the model by which I've evolved into, by working with midwives and finding out that the informed consent model really works well, and it meets the ethical obligation we all have to respect individual autonomy and not act like parental or like a bully and telling people that this is what you have to do. It's really the decision belongs to the well-informed family.
It happens to me pretty much every day, but I'm getting...
Well, you and I, we share a lot of clients together, so you know what we're talking about.
I'm getting a text from a client who says, have you had a chance to talk to Dr. Stu for me? Somebody you don't know yet.
No, you haven't. So just say no.
Every day.
Right.
Okay. Closing thoughts. We have a question.
Yes.
Lemur is 38 weeks.
Yeah.
Baby number one.
Yeah.
Not twins.
Bit of a male-shaped uterus, though.
So male-shaped uterus. Which non-textbook shape do you have?
I have a bicornuate.
Okay, so it's like a cartoon heart shape.
Yeah.
And at the top, there's a little dip horns. That comes down.
Yeah.
And two lobes.
Yeah, okay. Baby's in the right horn.
Dr. Stu, is there complications with a bicornuate?
Well, one of the complications is premature labor, which is obviously not an issue for you.
38 weeks, we're good.
Right. Another complication can be malpresentation, which wasn't your problem until this week.
Until yesterday.
Which is unusual.
Yeah.
There's sometimes can be a problem. If it's a septate uterus, sometimes there's a slight increased risk of a retained placenta.
What's septate?
It's where instead of having the uterus sort of two separate uteruses, it's got a little divider in the top of the uterus where there's like two horns on the uterus. Uh-huh. But it's for a heart-shaped uterus. But that's not what you have, apparently. You apparently have like
two horns.
Two separate uterus with just one cervix.
Yeah.
Right. So that shouldn't be, it should be a non-issue for her. Otherwise, no. I mean, I think, again, like I said earlier, if you conceive something to be a problem, it becomes a problem. I think that any woman who gets to term with a bicornuate uterus deserves to have a labor, because I've seen many women with a baby in one single horn like that deliver vaginally.
Do you have a specific question about it?
My sister has what's called uteris didelphus. She has actually two uteruses.
Right. Two separate cervix.
She has two separate cervix. Isn't that funny that the sister of a
OB.
Of an OBGYN has two uteruses?
She has two vaginas?
And she had babies. She had three babies.
All from the same uterus?
I don't know.
You didn't ask her.
But she had, it's interesting. She had a head first birth, and then she had a breech that came in with a foot down and got a crash C-section for that in New York. And then the third baby, she had a VBAC. And this was obviously 27 years ago. So it's pretty cool.
Wow.
Right.
What do you do if a foot comes out first?
Well, wait a second. It could be a VBAC from the other uterus, which is not really a VBAC.
No, it's...
Why would it be a VBAC? The incision's in the other one.
Good question. Don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe that's true. You're confusing me.
Sorry.
if the foot comes out and you're not completely dilated, that's a problem. Because along with the foot could come umbilical cord, and then it makes the dilating wedge that much smaller, and that you could get an entrapped head if the body fell through. So if you were in labor and you were only like 4 or 5 centimeters and a foot popped out, that would be a reason to then...
transfer.
Well, or if you're at the hospital, they would probably say, time's up, you have to have a cesarean. But if you pick out your mom's carefully to begin with and have either a frank or a complete breech, do you know which one yours is?
A complete.
Yeah. It's very unlikely that the foot will drop down until you're actually almost completely dilated. At which point, it's very common, actually, for a complete breech when you start pushing for one or two of the feet to pop out. As a matter of fact, it's mentioned in the documentary.
Okay.
So, yeah, otherwise, I think that... that you have every opportunity to deliver vaginally and probably have a good success rate.
Does the uterine shape change as long as the baby meets the criteria that you spoke about? Does the variation in the more uterine shape?
No, the uterus is an amazingly expandable organ. It probably would, if we didn't know that she had a bicornial uterus, full bicornial. There's no way at looking at her right now by ultrasound you could even tell.
It right. just okay.
You just think she has one uterus.
Looking at her right now, I can't tell.
Right. No.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah, you wear it well.
I'm really pulling.
I think
it off.
I really do
you
have
may
a uterus.
You may all have a bicornial uterus, and I can't tell.
Hey, watch it.
I can't tell.
That was almost anti-Semitic. All right.
You have a specific question?
I have. Well, I want to get into it with you, yeah, but I have a quick one for Steve. Is did you watch Knox come out?
Mm-hmm.
You saw like the breech delivery and the. Because I watched the documentary and I watched you deliver a breech baby.
That was Amora, yeah.
And it was amazing. I kind of fell in love with the process. So
is that why you shifted your baby?
Yeah, I purposely
into a breech so you can have that.
A lot of headstands. Could that have done?
Absolutely.
It? Yeah.
I'm going to tell you this. At the premiere for that film, a couple of moms were there who had both head down vaginal birth and breech vaginal birth. And they, except for one said they were just different from each other. And two said they preferred the labor with the breech baby.
Interesting.
Over the head down baby. Because people always ask that question. But they said the soft, smaller soft buttocks down there for that long part of labor was more comfortable for them than having the head down for all of labor. And so now I'm starting a new service that we offer. If your baby's head down and you want one of those comfy breech deliveries,
comfy maybe breech. That's
DrBerlin.com. Yeah, absolutely.
My next question is for Sarah. Was the recovery, I know you had twins, so it's a little different. That must have played a role, but the recovery from the breech, was that more difficult than?
Well, the thing with my breech boy is he was almost 8 pounds and he was a twin. And my doctor's right here. And, I tore pretty much almost from hole to hole.
Mm.
So, but stop. Don't make that face. And let me tell you why.
I even made that face.
Well, that was probably my doing more than you're doing.
Why was it your doing? Why are you just now telling me this?
Yeah, no. Seriously.
What do you mean?
Because we were reaching up inside.
Well, okay, but
you didn't tear. You didn't. Did you tear with Violet?
No, not at all with Violet.
Right. So it was all because of the breech extraction. Sort of thing,
but
right?
You didn't go elbow. I mean, you were.
No. I know.
Before I had this twin experience, the cords wrapped around the neck, breech baby, I tore all the stuff. It's like I would hear about other people going through this and I'm like, oh my gosh, wow, I could never do all that stuff. But I didn't. And I did tear. And guess what? I healed. And it was when it's like, at the time, like it sucked. But the body's pretty amazing.
How long did it take to heal?
And it took a while. Like, I mean, I'm not.
Yesterday, I think.
And it took several months. It definitely took several months.
Before you could play Twister again?
Yes, before we could play Twister again. There was just a lot of trauma to the area, But trust me, girlfriend, you are not going to be in the mood to play Twister. It's good because you're,
it's more like playing Sorry.
He's been playing solitaire.
Steve can talk about that part of it, but it's all good because your attention, you want the baby, you want you guys to nest and be in lovey-dovey baby world. And if you do tear, so what? Who cares if you tear? You're going to heal. It's going
to
go back.
It goes back.
Trust me, I had pushed things out, okay? So it was not pleasant. It was uncomfortable.
Better than ever.
Yeah. No.
It's true.
No. Honestly,
better than ever.
Yeah. Like the sex is incredible, and things feel bigger and tighter, and I'm just like, what? I mean, I'm like, how did this happen? Like twins. I didn't think it was supposed to happen like this. But
do you have an identical brother?
So anyway, but all I want to tell you is don't be afraid. Your body is so strong. Your baby is so strong. You guys know what you're doing. If you tear, if this happens, that happens, the cords, don't be scared. Just do nothing but have the most incredible, most positive love and energy from both of you, you know, towards your baby. And the other thing I wanted to tell you, and I feel like this is a big thing that I talk to moms that have never been through labor before, is at first I was also very intimidated by the thought of contractions, you know, because I'm thinking it's for just hours on end. That's not how it is at all. It is so manageable because a contraction is like this, okay? So it's you start down here and you're at the bottom of your contraction. It's not that bad. And when you're at your peak of your contraction, it only lasts for like 10 seconds. So you can do anything for 10 seconds. I can sit here and saw my hand off for 10 seconds. I can do that. So, and that's way more uncomfortable than doing something our bodies were made to do. So when you get to that height of your contraction, just know it's gonna go down. Breathe through it, just breathe. And that's so hard to think about when you're in the moment. But one of the things that our midwife told us, I remember, is she said to make low sounds. She said, when you're in labor and you know, and you're going through it, and to not be like, ah, because all that's just tightening, everything gets tight. But if you can just find a way to just kind of be like, ah, and literally like, ah, just make low sounds. Because if you don't remember anything, like your husband, like, you know, coach her, just, ah, just really low sounds, because that just helps.
It actually helps move the baby down.
It helps open, you know? And at some point you have to give in. You have to just like, you have to accept it all. You got to ride the wave, you know, and give in to it, you know. But if you have, but just your thinking, your love, your energy, that's 90% of the game right there. The rest, you know, your baby knows.
I've been working with you for a little bit, and you do have, going into it, you're mostly excited.
Yeah.
And, you know, a little bit anxious of the unknown. But you have like that right chemistry for a really great ride. And I think the tips that Sarah's given you.
I'm expecting a really like psychedelic experience. I'm like,
it's the best ride of your life.
Like a great trip. That's what I'm expecting.
I think when you go in completely afraid, totally fearful, it's just so much harder. But together with the excitement that you have and what Sarah's giving you, I can feel the energy. Like, I want to go home and try it.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
I
sometimes cry over the thought of possibly never being, you know, pregnant again and us never having any kids again. Cause I don't know, but because I loved it. I love it so much, you know, that, yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
We need final thoughts, Steve.
As a husband and father, just being supportive, I just think that communication and just being a support system, a sounding board, is the best thing that I did. And I also think that this whole birthing experience made us grow closer together. I think like you were saying, everything that the woman has to do to get to a good place to have a successful childbirth, is what has to happen in a relationship too. So if anything, it made us closer, and I, you know, love that.
I would recommend that everybody have twins after watching your guys. Do you, Kira?
Kegels.
Kegels.
Kegels all the time.
Still do them?
I pee myself constantly.
You do?
I do.
So you didn't have the exact, like, Sarah's, like, you know, silly putty recovery.
No.
Memory
silly
foam.
Silly putty recovery.
Memory foam,
like,
you know.
It goes boing, it's just snap back, is what he's saying.
Mine didn't snap back. I don't want to put that out there.
What?
Wait, what are you talking about?
I piss myself. Do I have to spell it out for you?
You kind of made it seem like, you know, baby comes out and then bloop, 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 bloop.
No. It does over time.
Over time. But
over time.
Kira's baby's like 9 months old already.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I still sometimes, like, my babies are 14 months, but and there are times
you have
when
to
I
tell
still
them.
Down there. What?
Tell us.
She would hold these ball bearings in there.
Oh, yeah.
For
you
hours.
Did?
She would go down to Melrose and walk for, and then these ball bearings.
Did you really?
Were in the. Oh, don't. Come on. They were in. I know. There's that.
got excited. I was about to Amazon them right now.
Go for it.
No, I know, but I've heard that was pretty believable.
I know. I'm aware of that.
Nice little weighted balls. Yeah. Put up there.
They do have them. They're a sponsor of the podcast.
little balls.
So, you know, actually, they're not.
Vagina balls.
The pleasure chest is, I think, a sponsor.
I'm so forgetful. I would forget them. It'd be embarrassing in the middle of Gilson's. Yeah. You know, 12 items or less.
Oh, that's so fun.
What was that?
14, ma'am. I have so much on my mind. And I'd be like, oopsies.
Oh, yeah. I had three in.
Like, this is 12 items or less. Oh, so you have to go to the other register. No, just Kegels. Kegels. That's, you know, those are my final thoughts.
They're Kegels. Dr. Stu.
Takira, pee often.
I do.
Right.
That's in my pants.
No, not in your pants.
Well,
if you think about going, go. Now, my final thoughts would be that I'm really honored. I was honored by Steve and Sarah for trusting me to do that because I do trust birth. I'm fortunate to have been very well trained and to get to practice the way I want to because I'm freed of a lot of the burdens and restrictions, and some of them quite foolish in the hospital setting. But the key, I think, is to really trust that this is a normal function of your body. And like digestion or respiration, it doesn't require attention at every moment. You don't think about breathing. You don't think about digesting. And you shouldn't think about growing a baby and going into labor. It is something that your body is designed to do. Sometimes digestion or breathing has a problem. You have an asthmatic attack or you have colitis. You need a doctor. But most of the time you don't. And it's the same thing here. And if you go in with that positive attitude and you allow yourself to think about how other mammals give birth, they don't restrict their movement. So she was talking about going in with this really great attitude and the wave isn't going to be that hard to handle. And it's certainly a little harder to handle if you can't get out of bed,
yeah.
If you're just stuck laying there. But if you can move about, if you can eat and nourish yourself, if you're surrounding with only nurturing people, and you can do this in the hospital setting. You have a birth plan, you make it very clear that you don't want a lot of people coming in and out. You have a practitioner who you trust. I know him, he's very good, and he will honor you if you say that I don't want a lot of vag exams or I don't want this. He might put up a little stink, but you can do that. And try to labor with confidence, trusting that this is a whole thing, this whole thing. And I want to thank Elliot for cracking my back before we started.
Oh, me too.
And then also for all the good work that you do. And the other thing I would say is, even though Elliot is one, is that for any mom having her first baby who's listening to the show, you really need to hire a doula. Your chance of having an intervention or a cesarean section goes up dramatically if you don't have one. So the fact that you went on to do that because you really wanted to know more about the birthing process and you're nurturing in all the things that you do. I don't even know. We talk about this all the time. You know, Elliot's got this new event coming up or Alyssa's got this event coming. I don't even know how you have time to even take care of your kids.
Because I have a wife. She does everything.
Right, but she's busy too.
But I don't know. I couldn't do it without
always,
a wife.
You're always doing stuff.
I don't know how she does it without a wife.
Right.
I got a wife.
Well, women can do that,
yeah,
and we can't. So, and well, by the way, again, thank you guys for
I want to thank trusting you guys.
I have another baby. It would be fun to do it again.
Yeah, special delivery.
I know.
And they're so cute.
I just want to say to you two, because I don't think, first of all, Dr. B, I have known you now for 7 years. And from the moment that I met you, you've changed my life. You've changed my life. You've changed my children. You have done so much good and you keep continuing to do good. And I only hope in my lifetime I can make as much of an impact as you are in yours. And thank you for inviting me to this. Thank you for inviting me to everything that you've done and letting me share my story. And Dr. Stu, look at me. Let me move this. I can't tell you how many times Steve and I talk about you. We fell in love with you when we met you. And the fact that you came into our lives, you delivered these twins, and there were times where I honestly wasn't sure. I wasn't sure because Knox was breached, because he was this, because he was that. But I remember I just stared at you, and I was watching your every move, and you were so confident, and you gave me so much confidence. And we talk about you all the time. I talk about you every chance that I get. So thank you. Thank you so much for your talent, for your hard work, for you continuing to do the walk that others don't do. And if there's ever a situation in which I can come with you, I can do something something with you, or he can, I will be the first person with you. So thank you for you.
All right. Well, if I ever can't do what I'm doing anymore, can I move into your guest room?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Perfect. Yes.
That's where Steve hung the noose.
Yeah.
I want to thank everybody for joining us today. We're all in the Twitter sphere. Dr. Stu Fishbein is at Dr. Fishbein, D-R-F-I-S-C-H-B-E-I-N.
Is that my Twitter?
That's your Twitter.
Okay.
I know you're there all 24/7.
I'm on it all the time.
And then Sarah Shahi at only Sarah Shahi, O-N-L-Y-S-A-R-A-H-S-H-A-I. Steve Howie at Steve Howie. And Kira Sultanovich at Kira Comedy. I want to thank you all for being here and sharing generously and openly. And the one final thought that I have is, it's for me, it's all about empowerment. I don't think there's one incredibly right or wrong way to handle your pregnancy or birth other than not having information. So listen to podcasts like these, read books, research all your options, and then talk to a provider and see, kind of like Sarah did, do you get support from your provider, or are they not on the same page with you? Surround yourself with people who support you, make informed choices, and be supported in those choices, whether they're at home, in the hospital without drugs, with drugs, maybe you opt for a cesarean. I'm behind any informed choice that you make. And so my hope is that through programs like these, you'll find the courage to make informed choices and be supported. You can find notes and maybe some pictures from today's podcast at informpregnancy.com. And anytime you have questions, write to info@informpregnancy.com. Thanks for listening to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. Be sure to share this episode and the rest of our series with your friends and find more at informpregnancy.com.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.